sometimes people will say something and they'll say, don't quote me on that. That contrasts to the fact that oftentimes we do like to quote people. We like to highlight some important phrase that people say that inspires us. One that I've heard several times is, if a person stands for nothing, they'll fall for anything. So that's a very familiar quote by Malcolm X. He said that. So I was thinking, these quotes oftentimes will inspire us. That's why we use them. We should also have a couple of quotes from the Bible in our minds as well, maybe written on our walls. So that's what we're going to do for the next several weeks. We're going to have a group of sermons that are going to focus on famous quotes from the Bible. And to go along with this, I have created a discovery Bible study guide. I cannot possibly say everything about a passage in a sermon, so Heidi has helped me create this Bible study discovery guide. It's about the shape of a bookmark, and you can put it in your Bible, and then maybe on the Sunday after, the week after the Sunday, you can look at these and get a little bit deeper into the topic or the text that you're studying. So those on the back table as you leave, please pick one of those up and enjoy that. And let me know what you think about it and if it's something that helps you with your own in-depth study. Our quote today is from the book of Esther. It is a quote that is made by a man named Mordecai. And Mordecai becomes a prince of Persia. At this point, he is trying to encourage his niece to do the right thing. The first quote is found in Esther chapter 4 and verse 14, where Mordecai says, "Who knows? Perhaps you have come to this position for such a time as this." So the quote is, "For such a time as this." And if you're going to have a takeaway, to be able to just quote that for such a time as this. Mordecai is talking about what is going on in Esther's life and what is going on in the lives of the Jewish people who are in exile in Persia. Esther has been made queen. And she has been made queen for no other reason that we can tell than she's a very beautiful person. And she has, before becoming queen, she has had to go through all of these beauty treatments that take her natural beauty and enhance it, so that she's very, very beautiful, perhaps the most beautiful woman in the kingdom. Certainly that was the goal of the king, that his queen be the most beautiful woman in the kingdom. So that's her qualification. The qualifications are her look. And oftentimes, if you have a skill, or if you're attractive, or you have accomplishments, you are considered great for no other reason but those accomplishments. There may be no substance to you at all, except these things. And it is common for people to think of these things perhaps separate from our faith. And that's where the message connects with our lives today. God gives us things. Now we are who we are because of Him. And He has an expectation of what we do with what we're given. You've heard the phrase, "It's in the bag." That's another quote, perhaps. I want us to think about that a little bit differently. I want us to think about that from the perspective of that if you have these attributes, if you have beauty, if you have accomplishments, If you have this, then that often puts you in a position that is separate from anybody else in the bar of beauty. D stands for beauty, A stands for accomplishment, D stands for gift. And if this is who you are, and if you have these things, oftentimes those are considered an end to themselves. And oftentimes they give us a lift up. We've done nothing else but live good, or we have this gift, or maybe we have accomplished something over here, and then we're made a 40. That's a very important aspect of the American culture. Lenita showed me this meme. A meme is just a little graphic that has like a phrase or a point, and you may have seen this, but the United States has become a place where entertainers and professional athletes are mistaken for people of prominence. I've needed a doctor, I've needed a teacher, I need farmers every day. I have needed a mechanic, a plumber, a house painter, a barber, an insurance agent, and a lot of other everyday people. But I have never needed, not even one, needed a pro athlete, a media personality, or a Hollywood entertainer for anything. But oftentimes these people are put up as the prominent people of our culture. And a lot of what I've seen is these things, the beauty, the accomplishments, the gifts may actually be a detriment, because what we tend to do is focus on the gift and not on the giver. All of these things come from God, and they do act as a gift from God. But when we focus on the gift and not on the giver, we may miss the fact that he was given to exalt the giver. So how do you know you are at such a time as this? How do you know you're there? And that's when spiritual preparation intersects with a spiritual issue. And that's what we have going on here. We have spiritual preparation that intersects with a spiritual issue. The passage that we read talks about what is going on at the time. And what it is that the Jews are in danger of being killed, being persecuted. It comes into play because of something that is not even connected to where Esther is. But when Mordecai drops this truth, for such a time as this, it sparks something in Esther. And so her spiritual preparation now, perhaps, is going to intersect with the spiritual issue. So how do you know you're in a spiritual issue? And that's the first point. And that is when rules of men conflict with the laws of God. And that is what is happening here in chapter 3. You guys may need a little background. Chapter 3, a person named Haman, who seems to have some hatred for the Jewish people, after have become king, then some other things are taking place. And that's where we start out in chapter 3, verse 1. After all this took place, King Ahasuerus honored Haman, of Hamadiah for the Agadites. He promoted him in rank and gave him a higher position than all the other officials. The entire royal staff at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to Haman, because the king had commanded this to be done for him. But Mordecai would not bow down or pay homage. The members of the royal staff at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why are you disobeying the king's command?" And they had warned him day after day, and he still would not listen to them. They told Haman to see if Mordecai's actions would be tolerated, and he had told them that he was a Jew. So we have this situation that is beginning to take place. And it becomes a spiritual issue because of what Haman does with this. It enrages him. It makes him angry. He expects everyone to bow down and to worship him, to pay homage to him. But Mordecai is not going to do it because Mordecai understands that he's asking for worship. And he's not going to honor Haman in that way. He will show him respect, I'm sure, and that which is due to him as another man, but he's not somebody that Mordecai is going to bow down to. So Haman with a plan and goes to the king and tells him in verse 8, "There is one ethnic group scattered throughout the people in every province in your kingdom, yet living in isolation. Their laws are different from everyone else's, and they do not obey the king's law. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If the king approves, let an order be drawn up authorizing their destruction, and I will pay 375 tons of silver to the accountant for deposit in the royal treasury." So he's got this scheme. He's got this plan. He's got this idea to not just take care of Mordecai, but take care of all of the Jews. And one of the things that I think this does teach us is if we didn't read this story and we just knew what was going on, maybe we just got a news report. We heard on CNN about Haman's plan and the king's plan to destroy the Jews. You know, and we don't know what's going on in the background. And that's often the case in the news. We don't know what's going on in the background. We're just told something, but what's going on in the background here is you have a politician who's up to no good. And I think that's possible even today. We have politicians who don't have the value system. Haman couldn't possibly understand where Mordecai was coming from. Mordecai is a person of faith. And so how do we know there's a spiritual issue? Oftentimes it's going to come into play when the rules of humanity oppose the rules of God, the laws of God. And of course, as Christians, as people of faith, we're going to turn and follow God. The result of this is there is confusion. Verse 14 of chapter 3, "A copy of the text issued as law throughout every province is distributed to all the people so that they might get ready for that day when everyone could attack the Jews. The king's was put on by royal command, and the law was issued in the fortress of Susa. The king and Haman sat down to drink while the city of Susa was in confusion." So again, there's another picture of the ruling people who have no clue what's going on in their own kingdom and why. It's because of the scheme of the adversary, the scheme of Haman. And what this scheme is trying to do, and we talked about it, is that the schemes of the adversary are intended to thwart God's plans in history, to get us to change our attention and our loyalty from the Creator to the Creator, from God to Satan. He wants the worship that only God is due. And so God has a plan. He's got a specific plan with the nation of Israel. What happens if the remnant is wiped out? What happens if the Jews are wiped out? Then God's plan perhaps would come to an end. And so it's not just Canaan. There's something moving behind Canaan. There's something else going on. And you have to be aware of that. But oftentimes we may not know the backstory of what we hear in the news or what we read about or even what we experience. We don't know what's going on here. But you know when it's a threat to people of faith, it's a spiritual issue where you might need to take some action. So we're going to stay on task. Really, the story is about two people of faith here. Mordecai is putting himself at risk. But Esther is as well. And so are they going to stay on task? Second point is that there is always a good reason not to do the right thing. And there are two reasons that we find in this text. One, what Esther knows is that Mordecai told her to conceal her Jewish heritage. And so for her to take the step to talk to the king about this plot that's taking place against the Jews, for her to do that, there's a fear that he's going to react, not based on the actual situation, but based on the fact that she's a Jew. And oftentimes, God's people are held back by fear. We're afraid to do the thing that we know to be right. And I think for Esther, it's a legitimate fear. We know down through history, Jews have been persecuted. Anti-Semitism does exist. It's a real problem. And so is she going to put herself in that circumstance? And there may be other things about that she's fearful about. Maybe she doesn't want to lose her position. Maybe she enjoys being the queen. And who wouldn't? Maybe she doesn't want to go back to her old life. Second, in reality, there is a real risk because she's dealing with a lot. What she has to do is she has to go before the king. But you don't do that. Look at verse 10 of Esther chapter 4. Esther spoke to Hathak and commanded him to tell Mordecai, all the royal officials and the temple and the people of the royal provinces know that one law applies to every man or woman who approaches the king in the inner courtyard who has not been summoned. The death penalty. Only if the king extends the gold scepter will that person live. I have not been summoned to appear before the king for the last 30 days. Esther's response is reported to Mordecai. So actually there's a fear here, a people issue. Why hasn't she been summoned by the king for the last 30 days. Maybe he's been busy. But maybe there's something wrong. Maybe he doesn't love me. Maybe what I said to him the other day, or 31 days ago, so there's some more fear, but there's a real risk here. That is, there's a loss. And the relationship is one thing, but the law is something else. So we have spiritual preparation and a spiritual issue. And if all are always going to come together, these things are always going to intersect in such a way that we have to make a decision. We have to decide if we're going to follow what God expects of us and do what's right from the perspective of a person of faith, or are we going to stay along with the crowd? So what we see in Esther is resolve. We see resolve. We see that preparation has accomplished its goal. When Mordecai drops this truth on her, when he says, maybe this is why you're the queen for such a time as this. He says, Mordecai, you're right. And so, tell all the people to fast. Because I am going to fast. My people are going to fast. Everybody's going to know that I'm a Jew. Nobody knows it, but everybody's going to know it now. See, she drew on the preparation, the spiritual preparation that existed in her life. And I think this is where all of us can come to. It's a point perhaps we all have come to, where we have to make the decision of faith. I am going to do this even if I perish. Now, maybe it's not even if I perish, but maybe it's just some decision where you know I could do this and it would be an unfaithful move, or I could do this and it would be a faithful move. We all have to come to that point where we make a real-time, hard-life decision about how we're going to live in this world without all of us. We all have to come to that point. We all have to make that decision. Because one, God is faithful to His word. And that's what Mordecai tells us. He says, you know, you can keep quiet, and you can keep the truth to yourself, but God is going to bring deliverance from another place. And what I wonder is, in your life, maybe God puts you in a place to do something, and you didn't do it. Has God had to redirect and find someone else to do this thing? That's what Mordecai says. You can refuse to do this, but because God is faithful, it will still happen. But God promises will happen one way or the other. Matthew chapter 16, verses 24 to 26. Jesus makes this point that if we make decisions based on the things related to this life, we're going to lose. Then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone wants to come with me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. So whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life because of me will find it. And that's where Esther is. Is she going to save her life? Or is she going to put her life on the line? Is she going to be faithful? Or is she going to be unfaithful? And we should never forget where this resolve comes from. 2 Timothy chapter 1. Paul says, I thank God whom I serve with a clear conscience as my ancestors did, when I constantly remember you in my prayers day and night. Remembering your tears, I long to see you so that I may be filled with joy, clearly recalling your sincere faith that lived, that first lived in your grandmother Lois and then in your mother Eunice, and that I am convinced is also in you. Therefore, I remind you to keep ablaze the gift that God has given you through the laying on of my hands. For God has not given us a spirit of fearfulness, but one of power, love, and a sound judgment. If Esther depended on her looks to move her life forward, she would have lost it. But if she depended on the power of God to move her life forward as a way of expressing her faithfulness, she is going to find it. God doesn't give a spirit of fearfulness or a spirit of timidity. He gives us a spirit of love and of power and of self-discipline. And these are the attributes that come into play with Esther now. Mordecai prompted. Mordecai says, you know, Esther, you can do what you want, but this is the truth. This is what's really on the line. And it works. The preparation comes into play. This stuff was already there. How did she know how to ask about fasting? Because this is what faithful people do when they're in a time of crisis and in a time of decision. They fast, and not only is she fasting, she's calling all of her countrymen to fast along with her. She is not depending on herself here. Now maybe her lips got her there, but they weren't going to keep her there. As a Christian, it's only through the power of God. And so to me, the point of this statement for such a time as this means that I need to think about my life in a sense of destiny. That I'm not here for some cosmic mistake. It's not because I'm beautiful, though I am. It's not because I'm accomplished. I'm amazingly accomplished. It's not because I'm gifted. Man, I got the gift. It's to serve my career. That's what life is all about. That is what life is all about. And then, when you have that, when you're ready for that, these two things are going to come into play. Your perception, your understanding, and a spiritual issue, a spiritual crisis are going to come together. And when that happens in your life, what is going to happen? It's about making a decision. This morning, you may need to make a decision to begin that journey of faith, and I want to encourage you to do that. Maybe you spent time studying the Bible and you know what you need to do. Maybe you need to spend some time talking with some other people. Maybe you need a Mordecai in your life to kind of point you in the right direction. You can make that request knowing that you're standing between the signs today.